Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Saturday Morning Anime Podcast, where we leave the analysis to the professionals. I'm your forward for the evening.
And I'm your number one fan. You, audience.
All right, now this is a weird episode, but once again, before we get started, I want to remind everyone that this show is not intended for kids, even though our favorite shows totally are.
So this is super weird episode, and also... we completely fumbled the bag on the intro. I'm Xavier. That's Trey.
Oh, hey. we're different people. I'm Xavier. He's Trey.
Okay. So this episode, I feel like we mentioned it early.
We did, in the sports episode.
And then just sort of let it sit. We're going to pitch something to you. We're going to pitch a sports manga, as it were. Akin to the current fan fiction, I'm sure, being written about the anime YouTuber chess arc that happened recently. But what we're going to pitch to you is a sports manga on one of the greatest sports that ever exists, Gaelic football. a sport almost no one has seen played, but I have. I've seen a lot of it.
Have you played it?
I have. It's real fun.
Okay, so for those who don't know what this episode is, sometimes Xavier and I get exceptionally bored, and we bore very easily. And one night, from dinner until about 9 p.m., we sat together and planned out the entire story and main cast of a Gaelic football manga. And we just have one piece of paper with all these notes on it, and we're just going to tell it to you guys. You can't write this manga. This is our idea. But other than that,
actually, if you have any artistic talent and are crazy, like, you can have it. I don't even care.
If you deliver us a chapter one of this manga, I will pin the tweet. You can give us a page. I'll pin the tweet.
So if you stick around for this episode, which can't blame you for not, it's a fun ride. Trust me. Just think of it as one of the series in review episodes, because we will be going over everybody.
Okay, so I know where I want to start with the description, because I have the page of notes over here.
Well, but before we go into it,
explain Gaelic football.
So I want you all to envision a field that's like a rugby field, but like a little bit bigger, right? Gaelic football has 15 players on the field for each side. And that includes 6 backs, 6 forwards, 2 midfielders, and a goalkeeper. Right? Sounds simple enough so far. The thing that makes Gaelic football really fun is the football, which is like a leather volleyball, I guess you could say, in appearance, right? Can be moved around the field through carrying it, bouncing it, kicking it, hand passing it, and dropping it and then toe-kicking it back into your hands. You can't carry it for more than 2 steps. That's where the toe-kicking, also called soloing by Gaelic football players, comes in.
So in this sport, you're allowed to, like, functionally dribble the ball, like in basketball, off the ground once. Then you have to solo it before you can dribble it on the ground again. So people will run down the field just throwing this ball at the ground and then at their foot back and forth. And then they'll, like, throw it in the air and they'll punch it at the goal. And it's fucking crazy because you're not allowed to throw it.
Yeah, you can hand pass. You can punch it to a teammate. Right? you can also headbutt it.
Yes.
Just saying that.
I was going to explain scoring.
Yeah.
So there's like a soccer goal at the end, functionally, that the goalkeeper's in front of. And then directly above that soccer goal is basically, think like the post at the end of a football field going straight
it's
up.
It's like a free throw post.
Yeah.
Not free throw. It's a kicker post or whatever you call it. I don't watch American football.
And if you get it like over the goal in these goal posts, you get like 1 point, I think. And if you get it in the goal, it's 2 or 3. Now, some interesting things about Gaelic football. If you get, like, red carded to the point where you're kicked out of the game, they don't put another player in.
You're
down a player. And if the game ends in a tie after 90 minutes, they don't go to overtime. You play a full second 90-minute game.
Yeah.
Until one of the teams beats the other. Because the sport is intense as fuck.
And there's fouls are aggressive physical fouls or verbal fouls. And it's a yellow card ordered off the pitch without a substitution by a red card or ordered off the pitch with a substitution by a black card. But that very rarely happens.
Yeah. So that's the basics. If anyone has any questions about Gaelic football, the Wikipedia article, pretty good.
I will say, just as like a thing, so generally you said two or three. It's 3 points for like a true goal in the net and 1 point what is essentially a field goal.
Yeah, I didn't remember if it was two or three. Thank you. I will say, go look up how the sport looks. It's intense as hell. It looks like a super fucking fun time. And there's no manga about it because the sport only exists in like four countries.
Also, there's technically tackling. Technically. Right? So what I mean by technically... You can essentially shoulder check someone, like in hockey, and you can slap the ball out of an opponent's hand. More than that, like a sliding tackle or hitting the opponent or tripping someone or even like a two-hand touch tackle, those are all fouls.
It's a fun sport to watch at the very least. I've never played it. I've watched like VODs and recaps. I've never watched a live game of it. But we have some ideas on where to take this story if you're done with your Gaelic football descriptions.
Yeah, that is how Gaelic football is played. If it sounds interesting, that's because it is. It's a very interesting sport, and the compilations of it on YouTube are pretty hype.
So to start this off, I'm going to set the scene, all right? You play Gaelic football in the fall and the spring, correct?
You can play it whenever you want. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Let's say maybe you're in this high school in Japan playing Gaelic football, obviously.
Yes, in the Gaelic football club, because there could be a club for anything in Japan if you try hard enough.
And you're in the tournament of the Gaelic football clubs from the schools in your area, right? Now imagine in the last game of the fall season of the senior year of many of these players, everything goes to shit.
Yeah, and the beginning arc, right, is introducing you to this cast and getting them through what is essentially the fall tournament.
Yeah, I just think before we talk about the cast, I need to establish the main plot conceit that happens after arc one. And this arc ends with them losing abysmally, right? And this leads to one of the main players of their team, the heart of the team, if you will, becoming emotionally devastated and distancing himself from Gaelic football, leaving Japan to travel the world.
And now, this is a character. this is a character who, like you, is the most passionate about what's going on. So I'm trying to think of like who is a good example of a heart of the team character. Like Taiga from Kuroko no Basket.
Yeah.
Or even, like, not quite the team captain, right? But the most invested in what's going on and the person who everyone rallies around is like, yeah, that's the guy.
And the team is shattered upon the loss of this player. And we've tricked you. Most of this manga is not about Gaelic football. In fact, it's a world-traveling manga of the Gaelic football team trying to get their heart back and learn to love each other and become brothers again so they can win in the spring tournament, which is the final arc of the series. And the middle arcs are all of them going through a bunch of self-discovering journeys while traveling the world, following the heart around, trying to figure out what he's been doing with all of this time, which we'll get to later.
I think that, like, part of it, right?
Yeah.
So the fall tournament arc, the very first arc of the manga,
yeah,
essentially follows our team as it, right? It avoids that trope of the new guy comes to school and he's like the best at everything.
Yeah.
This is an established high school Gaelic football.
Yeah. of which we have written all 15 characters and their 16th water boy. Is it time to go through the characters before we go through like this main story stuff?
Not quite.
Okay. Right?
Because I want to get through as much of the fall tournament arc as possible. Because ultimately the fall tournament arc is a proof of concept, so to speak, where you introduce the audience to Gaelic football, what it is, and you show them playing a few matches. An example of what you could expect in an arc like this, iShield 21, the first Christmas Bowl arc after they recruit Senna is essentially just three back-to-back football games, almost. Kind of like that.
Same as like the main, like the qualifiers that happen at the mid to end of Kurukona Basket Season 1, like the way where, yes, you know a lot more is coming. This is just where you're getting to meet all these characters and see how they interact and get invested in the anime basketball, you know?
Now we can, like, go over our 15 boys.
Okay, so first of all, the heart of the team. None of these characters are named. We have 15 names, almost 20 names written down, but we have not given a name to each one of the characters. We're just going to describe their archetype, all right? The one who leaves. The second member is the team captain, and all we have written down in the notes is purple hair. That's it.
It's important.
We don't have a bunch of notes for all of these characters, but we do have good notes. We'll get back to the captain. The next one is important to me. It's the nerdy character who is kind of the brains of the team. And he has a weird arc where they're traveling around Japan following their friend who's lost. And you find out that this manga takes place in the same world as Keijo.
Yes, famous manga slash anime Keijo.
And this guy, the nerd guy, gets into Keijo gambling, where he's like gambling on the outcomes of Keijo matches and learning more about how to observe sports in action through becoming like a top tier gambler in competitive Keijo. And Keijo, as we've discussed before on the show, is a sport in which women basically get on wipeout-style platforms in pools and use their chest and butt to knock other competitors into water competitively.
Yeah, so from competitive Keijo gambling, he learns not only about essentially battlefield strategy and how to fake your opponents out, and is the playmaker for the majority of the team. Like, when they are down and out, the person they turn to for the playbook is this character. He's also the character that discovers what will be sort of the ace player who we'll talk about later's power up.
Yeah, we're almost there. The fourth player is the guy who's really into card games. And he has an arc similar to like an Uchiha from Naruto. He's traveling the world looking for his dad. And they find the dad in America, because they spend a whole arc in New York getting in with like competitive card games and like the mob. And a couple of these characters have really great moments in New York, like the card game guy who travels and follows all of these clues about his missing father, playing the incredibly difficult game of 52 card pickup.
Yeah, so it's important that all of this happens in New York, because Gaelic Park in New York is one of the like largest spaces for Gaelic football that is not located in Ireland. So they do all of this in like this main sort of chunk of the story happens in New York, and this card player who happens to be on the team. It's important to note, when we say good at card games, that there are sections of each arc just sort of devoted to him learning more information about his dad, who is also disgustingly good at card games, in things like 52 pickup, in things like blackjack, spades, but also things like Yu-Gi-Oh, card fight Vanguard, buddy fight. Like, he's just good at card games.
And I don't remember all of the details, but we find out that his father is a card game player in the New York mob. And he gets an entire story arc of like fighting his way through the card games of the New York mob to meet his father again.
Yeah, he essentially goes through in a cagey style way of death games based on card gambling, in which the gambling portion is handled by the brains of the team, whose gambling skill and poker face are ridiculous, and all of the actual talent for playing comes from them.
And that we go to the next character, the fifth player, who is the feminine presenting ace, who learns the technique from the gambler character. Would you like to tell them what the technique is?
Every ace of the team has to have a special ability, whether it be the basketball Sharingan or not being noticed by the other team, or just being able to jump really high, or having the fastest run. But this ace, because he is so feminine, as many an anime boy is, has really feminine hips. And the Keijo gambling member of the team realizes this in a flash of inspiration. And he spends multiple arcs training the ace of the team to move his hips like a Keijo player, because the entire team gets really into sort of watching Keijo for fun. Because they see him constantly gambling on it, and that's how they're affording their trip across multiple countries.
He is also the funds, as he's so good at Keijo gambling, he pays for this. But the feminine ace basically learns how to dodge tackles and run faster by mimicking the hip movements of Keijo players. And that's the big anime superpower that is important in the spring tournament arc.
Until eventually he can even make super shots that can basically bypass almost an entire team because of the amount of force he's able to generate with his hips.
We're pretty proud of that one. I was really hyped when he came up with that. Next we have the quintessential, the one you really want to root for, which is the hopeless romantic. And he does get a romance in the series, a true full fleshed out romance when they're in New York. Because when they're dealing with the mob and the mafia and the card games, he falls in love with a woman who is working at a nightclub serving drinks in New York City.
So the hopeless romantic is exactly how he sounds. He's not a womanizer. This is important. He legitimately falls in love in every country that they're in, but he's always the spurned lover. He's never wanted, and frankly, he falls in love way too fast. And most of the gag of his character is them having to essentially drag him back onto the bus or plane or train because he's still trying to woo someone who really doesn't want to be wooed.
And I was going to say, throughout the series, he starts to grow and realize some of his unhealthy tendencies, right? And starts to better himself as a person looking for romance. And by the end of the series, which is the main arc before the spring tournament, is their long arc in New York, he's visited a variety of countries already, and he's had his heart broken many times, and he's done a lot of self-reflection. So he is able to, with this woman in who's working at the nightclub in New York, able to build a much healthier romance and actually have his love requited. And it's delightful and a good payoff for his character after many, many, many arcs and chapters of romantic turmoil.
As for how these high schoolers got into a nightclub, fake IDs. Just straight up, after they're done with the mob, they essentially had access to the criminal element of New York. So, no one questions it.
The next character, and we only have two words written down next to him for notes, okay? It's the otaku character, and in parentheses, we just have Gogark and Gintama written down. That's it. Gogark, maybe?
Oh, so basically he's the gag arc of the series.
Yeah, I'm stupid.
His personal story, right, is just you see him in the background. He's decent, he's a solid player, and he's not dragging down the team in any way, but he's obsessed with anime and manga until finally, when they're in Korea, he just sort of, I guess you could say, has a mental break as far as anime and manga are concerned, and realizes that the plight that they find themselves in perfectly mirrors anime and forces everyone into a competitive kick the can arc because it's just like Gintama.
I now understand that says gag arc with a K, and that our handwritings are just really bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have to give a shout out to Gintama because it's a masterwork, and any self-respecting otaku who would identify with the term, probably a large fan of Gintama.
Also, a big part of this, I remember us talking about, is him constantly lamenting over the fact and finally being able to, by the end of this arc, perfectly dye his hair to bluish silver.
We did talk about that, which makes him even more aesthetically pleasing for the payoff of the spring tournament arc. The next character is the quiet, understanding, gentle giant of the team, but he does the thing where his eyes are like slant, you know, and close most of the time, except when he's playing Gaelic football, he has like a whole facial expression change and his eyes open up and he gets really intense.
So this character does not carry with them their own arc, but he is essential, right? There are several times when this team is put into a kind of despair, whether that be personal despairs or team despairs. When they lose the fall tournament and don't know what to do, he's the one that gets the team captain hyped up to give a rallying speech to go find their friend. He's the one that's giving life advice and constantly picking up the hopeless romantic. He's, like, always palling around with the ace. He's constantly like, guys, don't worry about it, when everyone's like, the otaku is being too otaku-ish. So, like, that he's like team mom. But on the Gaelic football, absolute monster and super broad-shouldered and, like, the best at tackling.
Yeah. I always pictured him as one of the rears, like one of not like an aggressive player, but like someone in front of the goalie.
Exactly. Maybe. Like, interceptions are this guy's deal.
Exactly. The next player is the Catholic man who is red carded in almost every game of Gaelic football they play. That's it.
Yeah.
Those are all our notes.
This particular member of the team, right, is a Gaelic football purist. So he converts to Catholicism to be more like the residents of Gaelic football's home, Ireland. But he can't quite keep his temper under control because, as some people will tell you, converts make the best zealots. So when he feels like someone isn't respecting the sport of Gaelic football, he can't control himself. And ends up fouling. And because this team operates on the exact minimum number of players, with the exception of a water boy character we'll get to later, they never have a spare to sub in anyway, so when he gets red carded, like, that's just it.
Yeah, I don't think we actually have a huge arc written for that guy. I'll be real, we don't. Not for all 15.
Yeah, he's just fun.
So we have another character, and this... this one just says average guy in parentheses, big nipples for the swimsuit episode. That's it.
So this is, I have got, so of course there will be a swimsuit episode, probably in Hawaii. I feel like we talked about Hawaii or like the US Virgin Islands,
yeah,
somewhere in the United States.
Yeah.
Where it's just a swimsuit episode. And they probably get, like, caught up in a game of beach volleyball and, like, are getting destroyed at it. And their competitive streak comes out. And they're like, we absolutely cannot lose to those teenagers on spring break in Hawaii or some shit.
Yeah.
And also, he has big nipples. I don't know why. But he is the absolute, like, average of the average player. His gag, as it were, is just how average he is. He looks completely average. He plays completely average. They don't even really like passing to him because they're like, but we have all this talent.
Imagine, haven't you heard I'm Sakamoto? But instead of being like really cool, he's just like, all right, that's it.
Also, there will be at least one game where he pulls the Kuroko thing of he's been such a non-factor that he scores the winning goal. Simply from being there.
Yeah.
And everyone forgot he was on the field.
The next character is one of the two twins on the team. They are identical twins. And this is the aloof hot guy who's too dedicated to Gaelic football to care about how many people think he's hot.
Yeah, so super attractive. The character that's being chased after by men and women alike because of how attractive he is. But his dedication to the game is what drives him forward. But there's some turmoil because him and his brother, who we'll get to, don't get along. And although he wants to focus on Gaelic football, he can never quite play with everything he has because he doesn't feel like his brother is ever enjoying himself. So by the time they get to the spring arc and you see their arc sort of wrap up and they reconcile, and we'll talk about how later, you see his performance, like his base performance, just shoot up because him and his brother are finally able to play together and have fun.
Now, before we get to the brother, there's another character who is the like the pretentious rich boy type who's from like the richest part of town, you know, who his main arc is he has to be humbled and basically stop being a classist. And when that happens, I believe somewhere in the U.S., he has like a whole appearance change and stops caring so much about like looking like the richest, most well-dressed kid on the team, and starts caring more about the brotherhood of the sport and being there with his best friends.
Yeah. So very stereotypical rich kid, very foppish, also decently attractive, right? Decently attractive character, kind of your Sakuraba from Aishido 21 of the series. But he, like, is rich and he knows it, and he holds it above the other members. And for the majority of the series is convinced that he's the ace of the team until he, like, finds out about the ace's actual training to get better through, of course, using the techniques of Kaijo players the world over. And this causes in him a mental break. And he is ashamed for ever thinking he was that good, and this causes him to become even worse. And everyone knows that there's something going on, but because he's always been sort of an outsider, they basically give up on trying to fix it until he meets an old mentor character who helps him rededicate to the game. And he finally is like, okay, I'm going to shave my head, I'm going to stop using all of these expensive products, I'm going to stop practicing aside from the team. And I'm going to get in there. He's also, throughout the games that you've seen the team play, the least physical player, and he actively avoids physical contact with the opposition. And this completely changes, and he becomes one of the most aggressive players on the team.
And he, over the course of the series, becomes best friends with a different member of the team, who is the goalie. The goalie is from a really bad part of town and is functionally homeless and has a really abusive family, and his he is part of what spurs the rich character to kind of become a bit of a better person and be humbled, because he realizes like some of the plights faced by other people in the world, which is one of the other things that pushes him towards this mentor character to learn what it really means to be like a passionate, empathetic part of a team.
Yeah, because it should be noted, like, he does set himself apart from the team because he thinks he's better. But to him, right, and although they've oftentimes view him as insufferable, to him, they're his friends. They're his only friends, because growing up, he was sort of alone and set apart by his money. And realizing that one of his friends is going through this, and that another one of his friends who he thought was super talented, but not as talented as him, is working so hard and becoming so amazing, is what makes him feel guilty.
Yeah. So that's the goalie and the rich guy done, which leaves us with our last three players, which is to say, there's one guy who's conflicted about if Gaelic football is his true passion, because he also wants to be a chef.
I actually want to spend like a decent amount of time on this character.
Go for it.
So throughout the series, right, you see this character being aggressively friendly. Like, is the friendliest character on the team, outside the heart of the team, very outgoing and constantly going around all the different places they're visiting and trying the food, learning the cooking recipes. And every time there's like a big win or anything like that, he's the one who cooks team dinner. And in the flashbacks, you see that the only reason he even joined the Gaelic football team was because of how hard the heart of the team was recruiting for it his sophomore year. and he's loyal to that, which is the, again, the only reason he's even on this journey right now, isn't because like he's particularly passionate about New York football at the start, but because one of his closest friends has gone missing. And he's lost because he's really passionate about cooking. But as he's been traveling, he's realized all of the hard work of the people around him and how close he is to every member of the team, not just the heart of the team. And he can't imagine getting back to school and worrying about things like cooking distracting him from winning, because he carries a lot of guilt for the loss in the fall arc. For, you know, if I had dedicated myself the way these guys dedicate themselves, maybe we'd be in the fall tournament, right? You're like, he is even jealous of the rich kid, because while the rich kid might have an insufferable personality, he is legitimately putting in all of his effort, like, from the start.
Mm-hmm. Do you have more on that character? Or because we're nearing, like, my favorite character, almost.
The only other thing is, I've gone back and forth with it. I don't know, and Trey, maybe you have an idea, on whether or not he should give up one or the other permanently. Like, if it's a thing, or anyone should even be there to witness his decision.
I think he might make the decision by himself, or maybe with just one other character. Maybe it's the General Giant character, you know, like, who helps him have the realization, right? Because that's kind of what the Gentle Giant has done. He's been this kind of almost parental figure for the team, offering, like, wisdom beyond his years, you know? That being said, I don't think he gives up on Gaelic football. I think what he does, right, is tell himself that for the rest of his time in school, he's going to dedicate every ounce of his energy into becoming the best Gaelic football player he can be, because he knows once he's out of school, he can go off to cooking school. But with always having the memory of him and his friends being the best high school Gaelic football players in Japan.
Yeah, and I'm imagining like a very emotional sort of sending his chef knives back home, like in the mail. For the remainder of the time that he's away, and that his arc happens like sort of midway through, not the earliest arc, but also not the latest.
Probably before they're even to America. Like, probably just a little bit before they're to America.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, the decision to visit America with everyone is, like, the moment in which he decides to send the knives back home, you know?
Yeah.
On that note, we have two players left. The first is the final member of the original 15 roster, who is, instead of the hopeless romantic, this is actually, like, the ladies' man guy. We don't have any notes written for him.
I remember this, though.
Okay.
So while everyone's, like, legitimately trying to be there and support the hopeless romantic, they're actually really judgmental of the ladies' man, because he really doesn't care. He's mostly doing it because he knows he can and has, like, this weird relationship with the, what's his name? The Aloof Hot character, because the Aloof Hot character seemingly doesn't have to try, right? But the ladies man character has put his all into this facade. And his entire arc revolves around him realizing how empty he feels about all of this. And the only time he feels anything is on the Gaelic football team. Culminating in the Aloof Hot guy actually picking him up during the game when he's been fouled, and realizing what this band of brothers like really means to him. And eventually he just stops womanizing and everyone is super confused, but the Aloof Hot guy seems to just get it, and they become like a devastating tag team.
Hell yeah. In this note, we come to my favorite character in the series. So the heart of the team leaves, right? And they need a 15th player because they are playing Gaelic football as they travel the world and practicing. And they pick up the Aloof Hot guy's identical twin, who no one thinks is hot because he doesn't have any confidence and he's not good at Gaelic football and he's just their awkward water boy at the start. Right?
Yeah.
And they bring him on the team because he's the only person they've got as a backup to replace the heart of the team. Right? And he doesn't become a secondary heart for the team. but he does try. What he does end up doing is he spends his entire arc self-actualizing and realizing through the love of his friends that he has value and he has talent and he is a good person, you know? And he ends up having the only in-team romance with the average guy. Because the average guy is the one guy who doesn't seem to stand out from the crowd, and he's able to sort of show the twin guy that it's okay to make mistakes and not be perfect and not be incredible in everything. And then by the end of the series, he becomes like the third in the trio of the ladies man and the aloof hot guy, who is his brother. And then there's him, who is now, because he has gained this self-confidence and self-actualized, he is finally able to, like, quote unquote, be his hot, talented self after years.
Yeah, because the problem with this character is mainly his confidence, right? So he thinks he's god awful at Gaelic football. But the truth of the matter is, they wouldn't have him on the team if he was actually god awful, right? Like, no one had to beg to have him on the team. He was just always on the outskirts. And he thinks that people don't like him because he's bad at Gaelic football. But it's just that he's not a very confident guy, and sort of has learned to shrink himself and put more attention on his brother. And throughout the series, you see him have little moments with every character where they sort of reveal to him slowly but surely the value of the hard work to be on the team, and that it's not all talent that's going on. And, like, it's one of those things where he is almost a stand-in for the manga reader. Not in that the manga reader is an average person, but that the manga reader is most likely an outsider to Gaelic football. And even though he's been the water boy for, like, a long time because he wanted to support his brother, he never really paid attention to the games because he had always, like, decided that his older brother was better. So every time there's something that needs to be explained, or every time there's, like, a strategy that needs teasing out, right? Like, when the smart gambler is like, okay, this is what we're going to do. He's the one that's like, but why? What is the point of this? Because he's that stand-in character that's slowly guiding the audience through.
And the romance? Gonna be as good as the one in Kare Kano, I promise. It'll be so good. If we get someone talented to write it. Now, before we get into the second major plot conceit, there's three more characters we need to discuss.
That Do would be, you want to discuss those three characters, right? Because we're at a crossroads.
Yeah.
Or do anime news, because it's kind of a long anime news section.
I was going to do the three characters, the anime news, and then reveal the second major plot conceit.
Got it.
So these three characters are... before I tell you the first one, it's important to hone in on the team captain with the purple hair and the heart of the team, like, grew up together and are best friends, and trained together from childhood. And the team, their management, their coach, basically, was the team captain of this high school's team like 2 decades ago. And he's the guy who's been training the heart and the captain since they were kids. And he's their team coach.
Yeah. Not the usual anime team coach, mind you, right? So, like, normally when you think anime team coach, you think of someone who's, like, weirdly aggressively short and, like, super old and have health issues. This is a kind of fit guy and almost serves, like, a father role to both of these characters, and upon the heart of the team leaving is probably the one who takes it the hardest. So you see him sort of, like, he's still attentive to the team, but in this constant state of regret and light alcoholism over the fact that they're not playing together anymore. Because, like, this is meant to be the last generation of the team. Like, they're all seniors. Like, this will be the final year of the club. And he failed them at the fall tournament, and now he feels like he's failing them at life.
And by the end of the series, he also self-actualizes and realizes that he's done his best, and will explain how that ends when we talk about the spring tournament. Next, they have the co-captain or co-manager, or like co-coach, I suppose, who is working with the nerd to plan out plays and be a shot caller. And it is the like their plucky, very passionate, like girl co-coach that they have, who we have written down. Initially starts off joining the team because of two things. She's had a childhood crush on the hopeless romantic, and she absolutely fucking loves the tactics behind Gaelic football.
Yeah. And eventually, right, like throughout the first arc, her childhood crush like completely falls away.
Yep.
Because she's become so obsessed with Gaelic football. And her childhood crush isn't even like a plot point of the series, so much as it's like part of her backstory and her conversations with other characters. And they're like, so why did you like agree to do all of this? And she realizes that like what's really important to her is the sport, and she wants to become a coach in actual Gaelic football, like professional Gaelic football, even once everyone is like done and gone their separate ways.
I do think we tease a hypothetical like romantic connection between her and the ace, but I'm not sure if we have that pan out in the series or not.
No, it never actually happens. It's just like, maybe, but you know, you gotta tease the audience of your manga.
And then we have the final member of the management team, who is even more passionate than the rest of them about Gaelic football, but it's way less about the tactics and the strategy, and it's more about the raw numbers and statistics of different players. And she's like an encyclopedia on all of the other teams they face. And it's like they're like crazy statistician, like mid-40s data woman who is canonically asexual. We have that in the notes.
Yeah, no, she's canonically asexual, and she's very open about being ace, because both the hopeless romantic, the ladies' man, and the ace try to hit on her, and she's just like, absolutely not. One, you're in high school, literally in high school, and two, who are you? Because she's also a romantic, right? This is important. There's a spectrum of being ace. So she's aromantic, asexual, and obsessed with stats only, to the point where she doesn't even necessarily see the players as people. She sees them as gatherings of stats, and she sees them going on this like multi-country adventure as a way to not only gather more stats for them and watch an exponential growth spike firsthand for the first time, but also see different players from all over the world because she's never been outside of Japan. Which basically culminates in her assembling the story of this team in a Moneyballs-type novel at the end of the series.
Yeah, it's also important to note that whenever they're driving around on like a tour bus or whatever, because they do have a big team vehicle, don't ask how they got into other countries, that is driven by the old team captain who is their coach.
Yeah, and as for how they got into other countries, they just ship it every time. Like, he makes that much money on KJ Game One.
All right, now there's a second major plot conceit, but first it's time for the anime news corner. So we have two pieces of news, one of which is short, one of which is long. I suppose we have three. The first one is that Danmachi, or is it wrong to hit on girls in a dungeon? Or is it wrong to pick up girls in a dungeon? I don't actually watch it. Has been confirmed for a third season coming out in like October, I think.
Yeah, so if you are a fan of Danmachi, is it wrong to pick up girls in a dungeon? Season 3 will probably adapt some of the most exciting parts of Danmachi. Not to say, like, Season 2 already left on a very high note, a very action-packed note. But you really see Bell start to come into his own. So it's quite exciting. Also, the fact that two of, like, in my opinion, the best isekais to come out in recent memory, Danmachi and Log Horizon, are both giving season 3s around the same time, is wild.
Hell yeah. Our second piece of anime news is that Xavier and I today watched the 8th episode of God of High School, and it continues to be a really fun, engaging adaptation of a really good manhwa webtoon. And I'm excited to see where it goes. I think it's very funny that the main character said, I don't need a magic ghost power. And Han Daiwi basically said, absolutely not. I want Magic Ghost. That shit's wild. Hell yeah. That's it.
It's something that I like in God of High School. But like people say God of High School has done bad pacing, which I get because they've made the pacing very quick because the beginning of the webtoon is very slow. That said, what I feel like they've done well, even if you don't like the faster pacing, is they've still kept the three protagonists very distinct with their own motivations and all still very likable.
Also, you get to meet a bunch of possibly interesting side characters, like the guy who knew Jin's grandfather, who I don't trust as far as I can throw that little shit, or the shark guy, who I think is, while evil, the secret hero of the story. And if you've seen the show, you know what I mean when I say the shark guy.
Also, Clown Man. And yes, I know what his name is, but I'm going to continue to call him Clown Man because he has a clown stand. Continues to be like best boy in the evil villain organization.
He's fantastic. I think his name's Q or O, one of those two letters. He's got green hair. There's a funny gag where he keeps not getting paid because he keeps using his powers. It's very goofy.
Yeah, it's 9 months without salary.
Right now it is, yeah. And the show continues to be really pretty when it needs to be. A lot of these hand-to-hand combat fights feel like the kind of moments that everyone praises Naruto for, where the hand-to-hand combat just kind of goes to another level, and it's just a fucking bunch of fun.
Also, Park Mugen, animated, is just such a good villain. Like, they've done a lot of work to, for some reason, make his animation seemingly just better than everyone else's. It's real weird.
Yeah, he's done almost nothing in the series except to be intimidating as shit and throw people across rooms, like, effortlessly, and I'm really here for it. And the final piece of anime news is that Crunchyroll has updated how its member tiers work for the United States of America, where most of our audience comes from.
Yeah, so they have added two new tiers to the U.S. service, or they're going to add two new tiers to the U.S. service, and one new tier to, like, other English-speaking territories. So in essence, Crunchyroll is going to have four tiers now.
For the United States, it will be free, fan, mega fan, and ultimate fan, and for other English-speaking territories, it will be free, fan, and mega fan. And I'm just going to read off what those four tiers are, and that's the news. The free tier is no payment, and there are advertisements, and you'll get simulcast episodes like a week after they premiere. The fan tier, which is what I currently own, is $7.99 USD a month. You don't get ads, and you get simulcasts as they premiere. The mega fan tier is $9.99 a month, and it includes all the features of the fan tier, except you can view stuff offline and stream on four different devices at once. And then the ultimate fan tier is $14.99, and it allows you to do all that stuff except stream on six devices at once, even with your offline viewing. And those last two tiers get a $15 and $25 discount to the Crunchyroll store, respectively, off of a $100 or more purchase every 3 months.
Yeah, so I find this interesting that Crunchyroll is expanding. I don't know if there's a demand for this, if people are really streaming on that many devices. I do think the offline viewing tier has been sorely needed.
I agree.
And also, it seems like they're... I noticed in the announcement, like, they kept talking about simuldubbing. So it seems like they're reestablishing their push for being, like, a big force in the simuldubbing game.
Which I'm down for, because I'm pretty big on simuldubs. Well, I'm not a huge, I'm not a huge dub viewer traditionally. I know a lot of my friends who will likely put out the extra cash for, like, Crunchyroll specifically as a service over other services, because they're big into simuldubs for most of their favorite stuff, like My Hero Academia, etc., etc.
I am interested with the offline viewing, because Crunchyroll is an app you can get on so many things. Like, am I going to be able to download episodes to all my devices? Is that what they mean by, like, four or six streaming screens? Or can I, like, just save the episodes on my computer like that kind of thing. Like how they're going to work out logistics of that will be interesting to see.
Yeah, like how will that work on like an Xbox or a PlayStation maybe? Or how does that work on like an Apple TV, which currently has a monopoly on viewing Crunchyroll in like smart TV realm? I'm just really intrigued because I know how Netflix does it, and Netflix lets you download on computers and phones and tablets.
Also, hasn't happened yet, right? Or at least I don't think this has happened with Netflix. I wonder how this is going to affect anime pirating. Some of you may know that Kiss Anime went down recently, which is like the place to get free, technically pirated anime. And like with access to, like, although the files are still stored seemingly on Crunchyroll, but with more access to being able to download a file, which means that there's some package of data being sent that is now stored locally. What that could mean for people getting high quality pirated anime.
Because theoretically, you could take your download of like the highest quality 1080p Crunchyroll shit and throw that on like insert torrent and pirate website here, you know, which is really weird to think about. But I don't do any of that because I have a tiny tablet laptop and a Crunchyroll subscription.
Yeah, I also don't do anything like that because I have a Crunchyroll subscription and a Funimation subscription because I hate myself.
I got my family's Hulu, I got my family's Netflix, I got my family's Prime because I'm a smart boy.
Sounds privileged. I pay for that shit.
Yeah, I know. I tricked them into like family plans for Apple Music and shit. Like I put the work in, but I've been thinking about shelling out for this Funimation. I'm not gonna lie.
It's just gonna be interesting to see because like if you've been on the internet and in the anime community for a long time, I think we've all like seen the slow decline of like the anime broken up into 20 parts, which was hilarious, by the way. I still go back and watch some of those series. But if this could be a new age of like how to get people free anime, because while I do think you should at every available instance support studios and manga artists, a lot of getting people in on the ground floor is getting them to watch free anime.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, that's why Crunchyroll offers free stuff with advertisements, you know?
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. Also, people are, like, kind of babies about advertisements. Like, I can still watch things with advertisements and not really care. But people will, like, legitimately stop watching something.
Yeah.
Just because of the streaming era that we live in.
I have, my Crunchyroll subscription isn't because I have a problem with ads. It's because I want simulcasts of stuff like God of High School the day they come out. That's why. I'm just
that's agreeable. The same for me.
Yeah, but that's the anime news corner. Woo! So now we're getting into spoiler territory for our manga. So if you don't want to get spoiled for the second plot conceit of our manga, which is revealed very early on, dip out now. Have a great weekend. But this is where we reveal what the heart of the team has been doing the whole time. And believe it or not, it's another left hook. Not only is this a death game manga and a travel the world manga and a Gaelic football manga, the heart of the team, he's been traveling the world playing Mahjong. He gets a whole arc where he learns to play competitive Mahjong and becomes one of the best Mahjong players in the world while finding himself.
Yeah, so basically, and like whole arc is almost a misnomer.
Yeah.
Because just like every arc the team goes through, there's like half of the arc that's just devoted to him playing competitive Mahjong, and they don't realize that he's playing competitive Mahjong. They've just sort of been following him through like rumor, because like a Japanese guy moving through multiple countries very quickly, not the most discreet thing in the world. And so they find out that, oh, he's been playing competitive Mahjong. But we, the readers, have been watching him play competitive Mahjong in, like, CD Mahjong bars and also the professional Mahjong circuit this entire time.
They find out very late. In fact, they find out nearing the end of their time in America. And then they follow him back to Japan for the championships of Mahjong, which is how they get back to Japan in their once their America adventures are done.
So they bust into the World Mahjong Championship, which this year is being held in Japan, and he wins the Mahjong tournament. And this is all for them to find out that this was all a trick. He never actually left Gaelic football completely for Mahjong. He's been training at night and playing Mahjong during the day. And all of this was for the sake of the team.
And he's learned a bunch of new techniques and ideas inspired by his playing of Mahjong that him and the nerd and the plucky girl all adapt into new, like, techniques for Gaelic football that they're going to use once they've reunited as a team to get back into the tournament in the spring to be the best team in Japan for Gaelic football.
Yeah, because there's essentially a flashback arc as he's explaining everything that happened to them, like his Mahjong adventures. And he discusses with them that it was his belief, right, at that time, that the reason that they lost is that this entire time they've all been working off of their instinct and what they think a Gaelic football team should play like. But none of them had any real personal experience to make a personal flavor to the game. And the conceit of the main antagonist team that beat them in the fall tournament is that all of them had very peculiar styles and new strategies that none of them had ever seen before. And even the statistician woman was blown away by what was going on because they had never been like so outclassed. And he realized he needed to find his own personal way. And he trusted in his team to also be going on their own personal journeys, and basically realizes, like, after they explain to him everything that's happened, that he has assembled the pieces for a perfect victory.
And that through his own personal journey of Mahjong and the other 14 members of the main team and the backup, they have succeeded in going around and all having their own personal developmental journeys that they can use to add their own special flair to their Gaelic football play to become the best team in the history of Gaelic football. And thus we have set the stage for the spring tournament arc.
That said, right, when we get to the spring tournament arc, this all sounds good. And they're like, yes, we're going to be the best team in history. But the other teams haven't been like sitting on their laurels, right? Everyone's been sort of gearing up, like everyone that didn't make it to the finals in the fall tournament, because the whole thing is the winner of the fall tournament will face off against the winner of the spring tournament for the championship. And usually, right, you're at a disadvantage in the spring tournament because you just had to play through this hellish gauntlet to even get the chance. And the fall champions have got this entire time to just focus on training and recouping their strength. And all the other teams have also not come to the same conclusion and are as varied as them, but basically decided to be specialists and just got good at like one thing each.
And the entire spring tournament arc is the main characters, like the whole team, coming to terms with the fact that they all bring different things to the team now, and they can all use their personal experiences to overcome the specialties of all the other teams in the tournament, so that they can win the spring tournament and face off in the finale against the team full of all the unique flavored players that beat them in the fall.
So they played through what is a legitimately grueling gauntlet in the spring tournament, filled with injuries, the hopeless romantic character constantly worried about like his now actual love interest. Right?
Yep.
And all of the characters like trying to remember the lessons they've learned and apply it, right? Because on paper, they truly feel like they're the best team. But they've had very few opportunities to apply it against teams that were sort of on that level. Because throughout their world traveling, the team would essentially, a member would get a power up and they would be the ace player for that week and sort of like actually get it together. But now they have to put all of those talents together to make an actual team, because these teams aren't just going to essentially let them walk all over them.
And now we get to the part why the twin, who is the water boy initially, is my favorite character. It's because the Catholic man learns how to not get red carded. That's part of his thing. He's good, but he always gets kicked out of the game. Right? He learns to be calm and all that. But in the last game of the spring tournament, like the qualifier to go to the finale, the average guy who is now the Waterboy twins' boyfriend gets red carded, and they have a moment on the sidelines where this is the first time the Waterboy has gotten to play in the entire spring tournament, where the average guy is like, I got called out on red card on a really bullshit call. You can take my spot. You can fucking do this. I love you. And they have a really sweet moment. And then he goes in there, and this is when the twin like finally fully self-actualizes, and he wins the game that qualifies them for the finale.
And everyone is like super fucking hyped about this, but they only essentially get a week's rest before the tournament. And so you see none of them can like truly sit still and just relax. And for the first 2 days, they overtrain. And this is when you get the coach coming to the realization that he did his best, because he's still like sort of guilty that the heart of the team felt like he needed to go on a personal journey. Like he should have been there. There should have been no blind spots. And he's sort of ashamed that he didn't realize that his team didn't have an identity. But he realizes in this moment where everyone's sort of overtraining on their own, they should be resting because they're so nervous because they're remembering that devastating defeat. But, you know, it's time for him to put his foot down and teach this team what it means to know your limits. Because while it's important to win, it's important to win, but there's no way to clinch that victory if you don't give yourself time to relax and you don't give yourself time to be the best you that you can be, and you're caught up in this anxiousness. And his self-actualization is actually becoming that father character in his head that he always was, and caring for the well-being of the team rather than just pushing them to win.
And then you get like a mini arc of a handful of chapters, maybe a volume, episode or two of the anime that will eventually happen, obviously, because this is a masterpiece. Where they just take a break and they just, maybe we have a second beach episode. They spend of these last 5 days, they spend like two of them training because they've realized we've done what we can. We can't overwork ourselves. We got to take at least half, if not more, of these last few days to center ourselves and reaffirm ourselves of how much we love, know, and support each other so that we can play at the best we've ever played in this finale. Because of the coach's speech.
And then, of course, before the final game, you get like a flash to what the opposing team has been doing. And they've been like basically like with fucking military discipline, just fucking working on their game nonstop, almost every day.
And it's scary. It's intimidating. These guys are fucking good at Gaelic football. I mean, obviously, you know, they did this military training literally with very few days off since the end of the fall tournament. So the entire time that our entire cast of characters has been going on this, all of these arcs and all of these self-actualizing journeys, they've just been grinding Gaelic football ability for like 6 months straight.
And the captain of the opposing team even, like, basically walks by our protagonist relaxing in the schoolyard, essentially, and is fucking disgusted. And he, like, basically goes up to them and, like, gets really angry, like, almost to the point of crying, because he thought that they were, like, worthy opponents and, like, worth actually playing, but now he sees that they're not devoted.
And while we don't spend a lot of time focusing on the antagonist team throughout the main story, we do spend a lot of time focusing on the antagonist team during the fall tournament. And then as the basically the sideline watching what's happening characters for the entirety of the spring tournament, which lets us develop some of the stuff going on with the antagonist team. So we care about the people we're trying to beat, because an important and quality antagonist is necessary for like the great finale of a sports story of this caliber.
Yeah, and the thing for the antagonist team, right, is that their whole essentially chip on their shoulder is that they know that Gaelic football isn't a popular sport in Japan. Of course they know that it's weird that there's a Gaelic football league, and they actually hate that the league is so small, but the way that they decide how people get into the end of the year championship is via a spring tournament and a fall tournament that essentially has the same participants, because the only reason it is that system is how small the actual like number of teams are. So they're trying to take it really seriously to prove to the world at large that, like, Japan can actually be a name in Gaelic football, and maybe one day one of them will become, like, professional because they've put all this time and effort in. And seeing, like, the lengths that our protagonist team has gone to, they start to feel a kindred spirit with them because they're like, oh my god, look how far that they're going to be good at the game. Like, they can help us. Like, our fight on the field is what's going to make Japanese Gaelic football be taken seriously.
And the coach...
So see them relaxing is the ultimate betrayal.
And the coach of the other team... it's the ultimate betrayal that makes them want to play so hard to beat these guys, right? But the coach of the other team doesn't actually care about that. After the final game, in which, I'll be real, our protagonists win, we'll explain how in a minute, the players of the other team have earned such a respect for their style of Gaelic football that they aren't mad, and they're proud because someone from Japan will be able to prove that Japan is a name in the Gaelic football world. The only person who's genuinely mad is the coach of the other team, who is fucking broken by the loss because he feels that his team has betrayed him because of all the work he put in.
Yeah, so his thing, right, isn't necessarily a love of Gaelic football. It is a love of, one, winning, right? But also a love of obedience. Like, these kids essentially came to him in their moment of need. And it should be noted, he's a foreigner, right? Like, this is an Irish guy. And begged him, like, please teach us Gaelic football. And he thought that their devotion was, like, real, and all they wanted to do was be the best. So he centered himself around that.
And really, they didn't want to be the best. They wanted to be taken seriously, which is a thing you can achieve by being the best, but is not their main goal, which is why they're okay with the finale being them getting second place.
Yeah, and there's also, like, of course, moments during this final game where all of the members in the antagonist team sort of come to this realization of, hey, we're recognizing you as our rival now. Don't expect us to go easy from here on out. And, like, fucking ratchet it up to 11. Because in the beginning, they're not taking them seriously because they saw them relaxing. And they're like, we're going to destroy them again.
And this shit's neck and neck, like breakneck. I'm willing to say, I'd be willing to make it a tie in the first game, and they play a whole second fucking game.
Oh no, that's exactly what happened. they tie in the first game, and they have to play an entirely separate game. And it becomes like a true test of pure endurance, because this has never happened before.
In the Japanese league.
In the Japanese league. Like, this has happened in the sport, but in the Japanese league, no one's ever been good enough to push them to this limit.
Then they tie with, like, a ridiculously high score. And at this point, like, possibly one or two players on each team has been taken out, depending on how the story is structured and everything, because we don't have every detail worked out. But it ends in a fucking tie, and they have to play a whole another 90 minutes. And at this point, they've been playing Gaelic football breakneck for, like, 3 hours straight with little to no break. Like 2 minutes between the fucking games, and it's absolute, like, balls to the wall, crazy high octane, crazy character moment shit through and through for chapters and chapters and chapters. And I don't actually know how it ends. I just know that our heroes win, probably by the hand of the heart, the guy who went to play Mahjong, because it just kind of feels right.
The way I envisioned it was the heart and the team captain of the previous team have, like, basically what is essentially a one-on-one face-off, and everyone gives them fucking space because they essentially tell the others to fall back because there's literally that little time left, and it's the protagonist attack, and he's like, I'm going to stop this and prove that our way is the correct way, because to get the winning points, they have to make a goal, right?
Damn right.
So they have a one-on-one face-off where he uses all of this, like, one, unyielding perception, willpower, and strategic play to outplay the enemy team's captain.
And then the enemy team is up, so he has to score this goal to win. right? Because they're up by two and he's got to score the three, obviously. And he ends up just barely overpowering the enemy team's captain and proving that their team's method of like of discovering themselves and becoming the best people they could be so they could be the best Gaelic football players they could be is superior. And the enemy team captain feels legitimately beaten and like they deserved to get that second place. And they're not angry about it. They're genuinely appreciative for how far this team has been able to take Japanese Gaelic football. And it's a really like sweet moment after this intense finale.
And of course, all the other antagonist teams and everyone is like in the stands. And they basically like gone to a radio station and stolen a reporter camera so they can record it because this is the highest level and most intense Gaelic football team, like Gaelic football game that they've ever seen on Japanese soil. And they can't believe that they were even here to witness this because again, they're used to being that small league that no one takes seriously.
And by the end of, there you go, go.
Which is why the protagonist team is like dying. Because, like, no one in their school even wants to be on the team.
And then they win, right? And not only does this revitalize their school's love of Gaelic football and make the league that they're all in massively more popular, spreading Gaelic football throughout much more of Japan, it also makes them legitimately recognized by some of the competitive teams from high schools in Ireland. And every character goes on to, like, live a life that is correct for their character arc, whether that be the plucky girl eventually becoming like a coach or the statistician eventually becoming like a career stats person for competitive Gaelic football, the old team captain, he retires, you know, and all of the characters go on to like live their lives, follow their other dreams because of their fantastic experiences within this 1 year of Gaelic football and self-discovery.
And the big culmination of it, right? The final panel of the manga, or panels of the manga, is the card game player and the gambler inviting everyone to like a class reunion. And it turns out that it's like at a mansion that they can afford because this is what they've been doing with their lives. One's become a professional poker player, and the other's just still really good at miscellaneous gambling. And behind this mansion is a Gaelic football pitch. And wouldn't you know it, it's the grown-up antagonist team from the spring. And they want to battle it out one more time.
And you don't get to see that last game. It doesn't happen.
Yeah, no one knows who wins. The last page of the manga is just the score. But it's not like there are no names, there's no home and away. It's just the score.
All you see is a ridiculously high score where one of the teams is up by like 2 points. And it's this really beautiful ending where you get to see all of these characters. You get to hear them like shooting the shit about their lives. The hopeless romantic gets to bring his American girlfriend, his now American wife, with them, you know. The average guy and the water boy twin have since like adopted a kid and are married. And everyone gets back together at this point, like the two older members of the management team. Like one of them's like the coach is a grandparent now. Obviously the aromantic asexual woman is just sort of living her life, doing stats things, but loves seeing the team again. And everyone comes together in this kind of beautiful finale where, you know, deep down in the hearts of all of these people, it's always been about a love of life and a love of the sport, which is what it's really about.
And that's how we wrote the best sports manga. We took all the best parts of every sports manga and crammed them into a Gaelic football body.
We wrote a majority of this in a single period of 4 hours from dinner time to about 9 p.m. on one singular piece of notebook paper. And now we will forever have this podcast episode existing to return to if we ever decide to have someone write this shit.
Which we probably won't.
Yeah, obviously.
As sort of the good boy message of the episode, right?
Yeah.
Which, like, shout out to us. It only took us an hour and 14 minutes to explain that all. The reason I think this is important, especially going forward from like 10 episodes in and over 400 downloads later, which is wild to, for me to think about, because this really is a hobby for us, and it's something that, like, the message that started this podcast was, hey, I'm bored, want to start an anime podcast?
I think my exact reply was, sure, I guess, which is my favorite sentence to say.
Is, like, anime, movies, whatever media you consume, is first and foremost inspirational in some way. Like, enjoying things is inspirational, whether you know it or not, because everything you consume has an impact on your life in some way, be that negative or positive, great or small. And sort of like that outpouring of dumb creativity that may like never get you anywhere is one of the most fun parts of anime to me, because so much of anime, even something like considered a masterpiece the world over, like Evangelion, comes down to, hey, you want to make something with Christianity and robots? And just do it.
Yeah, Xavier texts me often and just says, hey, you want to do X? And I haven't said no yet, I think I just keep saying yes, and we keep having weird lives, and I'm really happy about it. And I'm really happy we started this podcast. I'm really happy that one time I said yeah to coming up with a Gaelic football manga. And I guess it's my feel-good message for the podcast. One, thank you guys for listening to episode 10. It's wild that we have 10 episodes. We've only recorded 12.
And like 10 episodes and a relatively consistent weekly release schedule.
Hell yeah. During an international pandemic and also school and a bunch of other shit, like, look at us. But what I will say is thank you all for listening. If anyone made it this far, I hope you did. I like to think our idea is not that bad.
I'll know if you didn't. I can see the stats.
We are at nearly 400 career downloads on a weird anime.
We're over 400.
Are we really?
We were at 405 yesterday.
Holy shit. Wow. That means an average of over 40 listens per episode, from an anime podcast where the only advertising we have is texting our friends and two TikToks made by the glorious star, friend of the show.
And zero anime YouTubers.
Yet. This is your spoil. This is your secret spoiler. In one of the coming weeks, we're going to be talking about one of our favorite manga of all time with an anime YouTuber who has more than 25,000 subscribers. So look forward to that shit. I'm really excited about it.
Same. I'm really excited to talk about this manga, and again, I'm really excited that we've made it this far as a community, because we are sort of a weird community at this point.
Yeah, we have like 25 Twitter followers. That's fucking wild. We'd make this even if nobody was listening, so we're really happy that you guys are listening. Go, obviously, if you want, you can go follow us on Twitter at SatAnimePod. If you want to, you can send a link to our show on iTunes or Spotify to anyone you think might enjoy our silly little show, or any community you might be in that you think might enjoy our silly little show. And even if you don't do that, we're still just happy that we could have this experience with you guys. And consider this like the closing of our episode 10 as just a big damn thank you to y'all, because we've never specifically thanked just you guys. We always thank the community or a certain aspect of the community. Thanks for the love and support. This has been damn fun, and I'm excited to keep doing it.
Exact same, and also because Trey left them out. The people who listen on Stitcher, I see you. You are loved.
How many people listen on Stitcher?
I don't know exactly how many, but it's like 3 to 5 per episode will download from Stitcher.
Hell yeah, I love that. Yeah, I hope any of this brought any of you any joy or inspiration. The day that I get fan art about this series we've created will be the happiest day of my life, without compare, actually. So yeah, have a fantastic weekend. Have a fantastic week. Go work your ass off for whatever it is you want to achieve. Make sure to take a break, drink some water, get some sleep. And we'll be here next Saturday, I guess.